Luke chapter 2, verses 13 and 14, reads, "And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace among those with whom He is pleased." Matthew 10:34 reads, "Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword." The Christmas story. Is it true? Or is it fantasy? Is it just a collection of traditions and myths? Well, there are certainly traditions and myths in the story, the details. For example, the most obvious one has to be the time of Jesus' birth. December 25. Could not have happened then because the shepherds were not in the fields on December 25. It's most likely in the spring or in the fall. But what about the angels singing? We have all these pictures of angels singing. But nowhere in the Bible does it say that the angels sang. They gave praises and they said, glory to God. But nowhere does it say that they sang. Now, it's quite possible that they did. But again, it's interpretation, it's tradition. Or what about the shepherds and the wise men together, and all these wonderful little nativities that we see? They're always together. And I think many of us, or maybe all of us, kind of grew up thinking that, well, that's how this Christmas story happened. But the fact is, the shepherds were there the night of Jesus' birth, and the wise men came sometime later. Maybe weeks, maybe even months later. This week I read an article saying that, the whole idea of an inn, no room at the inn, may be simply tradition, maybe myth. That in fact the word translated inn in Luke into English can also mean guest room. So one theory that's been put out now is that, they may have stayed at the relative's house and that there was no room in the guest room. And actually that theory does have merit because no respectable person at that time would have stayed in an inn. Inns were doubled as brothels, usually. And innkeepers were ruthless. If a guest couldn't pay, that guest was sold into slavery. Not only that, but Bethlehem probably didn't have a population necessary to support an inn. And so it was quite likely that Mary and Joseph stayed in a relative's house. And because Mary was about to give birth and become ceremonially unclean, she wouldn't have been welcome in the main parts of the house anyway. That's why they may have been relegated to the stable, the back of the house where the animals stayed. Or, it's another, we've all kind of grown up thinking that the wise men, the magi, followed the star. Well, you can kind of read that in the Bible, but it's not there, precisely, explicitly. And then, how about the massacre of the babies by Herod? Now, I get the idea, my impression at one point was that there were hundreds, maybe even thousands of babies killed. Well, that would have wiped out the entire town of Bethlehem, including all the adults and old people. Because the current population, I guess, is about 2,000 or so in Bethlehem. That's today. And back then, it would have been even less. And so a more accurate count of the actual baby boys killed at that time is somewhere between 6 and 20. In fact, it wasn't even enough to be a footnote in the contemporary historians' records. It was just another one of those Herod's little off-the-whim atrocities was nothing unusual. Only Matthew records it. Well, the Christmas story frequently sanitized, idealized, and in fact, sometimes comes across as fantasy. But it isn't. Well, for example, Matthew chapter 2. Traditional Christmas stories minimize Herod's role. But Matthew chapter 2 is really all about Herod. It begins and ends with Herod. The wise men are actually small players. And even Joseph and Mary don't play much of a part in it. Herod is the prominent character. Now, the real Christmas story is not fantasy, nor is it idyllic. Because the Christmas story, as recorded in the Bible, is how the world responded when God chose to come into the world. And even today, for many, Christmas is not a time of joy or peace. Now, for many, it can be actually a very depressing, dark time. Even when God with us, even with Emmanuel, Herod is in the world. Herod is with us too. Can any sense be made or meaning be taken from Herod's actions as recorded in Matthew? I'm just going to read through all of chapter 2. Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, 'And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word, that I too may come and worship him." After listening to the king, they went on their way. And behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then, opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. Now, when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Rise, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." And he rose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt, and remained there until the death of Herod. And this was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." And then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, became furious, and he sent and killed all the male children in Bethlehem and all that region who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had ascertained from the wise men. And then was fulfilled what was spoken by the prophet Jeremiah. A voice was heard in Ramah, weeping in loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children, she refused to be comforted because they are no more. But when Herod died, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, Rise, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead. And he rose and took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning over Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there, and being warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a city called Nazareth, that what was spoken by the prophets might be fulfilled. He shall be called a Nazarene. This story, this part of the story, this chapter, actually raises quite a number of difficult and troubling questions. Now, if God was leading the wise men, why did God allow them to stop in Jerusalem? This whole thing could have been avoided if God had bypassed Jerusalem. But no, God chose to allow the wise men to stop in Jerusalem. Even more troubling, why did God warn the wise men and Joseph, but apparently no one else? Why did God save just Jesus? Didn't God care about the children and families in Bethlehem? Does God play favorites? Does God only care about certain people? Perhaps the ones that are good and obedient. Was it God's will for the children to be killed? After all, there was this prophecy that was supposedly fulfilled. Do children suffer for their parents' sins? It's what the people of that time believed. Was God responsible for the children's deaths? Now, it's one of those things where I don't have definitive answers. Now, there are questions that come into my mind, but unfortunately, I can't come up with, well, this is why God allowed it to happen, or this is why God made it happen that way. I don't know. But as I've been thinking about this week, there are some suggestions that has come to mind that perhaps help me to understand perhaps some reasons as to why the story happened the way it did. For example, why did God allow the wise men to stop in Jerusalem? Well, one of the reasons perhaps was strictly cultural. You know, these wise men being rich and honored, and perhaps actually kings of distant lands, it was proper protocol to go to the capital of the nation they were visiting to seek audience with the ruler of that kingdom. It's just how it happens. But I think a greater reason, a greater purpose behind it was that through these wise men, Jerusalem, the people there, and Herod would be given a chance to respond to God's grace. They would be given the news that, in fact, good news is here. Now, I'm sure Jerusalem, at least parts of it, had heard stories of the shepherds. But they were shepherds. Well, no one thought much of them. They were considered unclean. They were considered sinful. It's interesting because the Jewish religious leaders considered shepherds extremely sinful and unforgivable because their flocks, as they moved from pasture to pasture, they would trespass over all these fields. And you would have no way of keeping track of all the fields that they would cross through and trespass, and so they would have no way to ask for forgiveness for each one. And so they were unforgivable and unclean. Now, the shepherds, not much thought was given to them. And so when, you know, they heard these rumors of shepherds seeing angels and going to visit this baby that was born in, you know, in a stable, no one would have given much credence. But now the wise men, magi, rich, come from a distant land. Jerusalem has to take notice. And perhaps it was a way that God used them to as a wake-up call for Jerusalem. And it certainly was for Herod. He responded, just not in the way that maybe God would have wanted him to. Why did Matthew include this story? I think understanding that may help us a little bit to understand, you know, why it's there. I think the primary reason chapter 2 is here is for its Christological purposes. What I mean by that is Matthew is trying to show to his audience, the Jewish people, who Jesus Christ is. The Jews, in their traditions, in their myths, believed that when the Messiah would come, he would be like a new Moses. He would be the leader of a new Israel. And so what we see here right at the beginning of Matthew's account is a start of that. And that's why we see, you know, why Matthew refers so much back to Old Testament prophets and writings. Matthew's trying to point out to his Jewish audience that Jesus is in fact the Messiah that you were expecting. Now, for example, Jesus escaping the wrath of the king just like Moses did. Moses escaped the wrath of Pharaoh, twice in fact, once as a baby, when Pharaoh tried to get all the baby Israelite boys killed, and then later when Moses murdered an Egyptian, fled. Jesus too had to flee to escape the wrath of a king. Jesus spent time in Egypt just like the Israelites did. And later in Matthew's Gospel, you have the baptism, just like the Israelites crossing the Red Sea. Jesus spending time in the wilderness, just as Israel spent time in the wilderness. Well, so forth and so on. And so one of the reasons for chapter 2 is to show that Jesus indeed fits the pattern of Moses in Israel in the Old Testament. Chapter 2 of Matthew, I don't think is primarily a theological chapter. You know, theological as in showing who God is. Shows who Jesus is, but it's not primarily to show who God is. But there are a few things in chapter 2 that certainly do show some of the characteristics of God. For example, what I just mentioned, or mentioned just a little while ago, regarding God's interactions and desires for Herod. Well, God offers grace to everyone, to foreigners, like the wise men, and even to those who will reject it, like Herod. I think it also shows that God does lead and guide those who are open to listening to God's voice. The word, this is verse 12, and being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they, the wise men, departed to their own country by another way. The word warned actually has the implied meaning that the wise men sought advice from God, and in a dream they were given an answer. So apparently, the wise men had some misgivings about Herod. They were questioning whether or not to go back to Herod. And in a dream, they were given an answer. And so they went another way. I think another thing it shows us is that God's presence doesn't necessarily mean an easier life. In fact, as this chapter shows, it could even lead to more difficulties, and it can lead to tragedies than if God was left out of the picture. That's a troubling little thought, but I guess that's the reality of things. There are three kings in this story. We have Herod. You might say the wise men are kings. And then you have the King of Kings, Jesus. The true king in this chapter is actually portrayed to be the least king-like, the most helpless, the poorest. Well, the one who doesn't seem like a king is actually the greatest king. On the other hand, the irony is that the one who least deserves to be king holds the position of king. Herod is essentially a pretender to the Israelite throne. Herod is an Edomian, which means that he was descended from the Edomites, a descendant of Esau. And so already you can see the problems that Israel would have with a king who is their bitter enemy. Yet there he is. The king who lived among the people who were expecting the Messiah, who knew and who had the knowledge of all these scriptures, didn't know when Jesus was born. Yet, foreigners, the ones outside, these kings recognized when the true king came. Each of their responses resulted in judgment for themselves. Herod, when he chose to reject the Messiah, when he chose to kill all of the babies to get rid of threats to his throne, chose to reject God, chose to reject the message that God wanted to give to him, and so judged himself. On the other hand, the wise men, when they saw Jesus, when they recognized the king, their response was the exact opposite. They worshipped. You know, here were these rich, influential men, you know, who I'm sure other people bowed to. Yet when they saw this baby, from all appearances, just another baby, they bowed down. They let go of themselves, the pride that they had of all the protocol and all the customs that would have said, no, you don't do that. They bowed down and they worshipped. What about the people of Bethlehem? There was time between the birth of Jesus and the shepherds coming, and the arrival of the wise men. I don't think they were as ignorant as we sometimes think they were. They had plenty of evidence that this was no ordinary baby. And I think they had time to respond. They had time to draw closer to the God of heaven. And then when the wise men abruptly left, not going back to Jerusalem, but the other direction, and then when Joseph and Mary and Jesus, when they suddenly got up and left, didn't that ring something in their minds? Whatever message was given to them, they chose, I think, to ignore. I think the last point I get from here, this chapter, is evil is just plain senseless. When we try to make sense out of evil, and all we're going to have is a headache. Evil is simply opposed to all that is good. And ultimately, I don't think any meaning nor any purpose can be attached to the slaughter of the children. That's just simply evil. And evil is unfair. Evil results in a broken world where things don't make sense. Christmas time. Well, I think it's a time when the conflict between good and evil is heightened. It's heightened because it's a reminder, it's an annual reminder of when God came to earth to begin His direct confrontation with evil. Christmas is when the light of hope came to dispel the darkness of evil. And so, is it any wonder that evil works hardest to hide and to destroy all that's good during Christmas? Is it any wonder that evil tries to erase all reminders of the Christ child? Now today, we could see it in things like materialism, the plain busyness of the season, the stress that we experience. And for some, well, maybe the over-excessive entertainment and partying, the abuse of alcohol is one of the tragedies of these holiday seasons. Well, results in death, results in injuries. And for some, there's the Christmas blues, loneliness, and depression. Though they're reminded of what they don't have anymore. I would say that Herod is still quite alive and well in our world. And I would even suggest that the world likes it that way. Wants Herod to stay. Because Herod is quite efficient. Historically, Herod the Great, who is in chapter 2 of Matthew, he was a very efficient ruler. He got a lot of things done. And the Herods of the world today, whether they're persons or just principles that people follow, they're quite efficient at getting things done in the world. And I think, are you a victim of Herod today? And I suggest that perhaps in one way or another, all of us are. The only way out, the only way of rescue and healing is Jesus. And the message I get from this record in Matthew chapter 2 is to listen for His voice, because that will show us the way out. Christmas confronts us with the question, what do we do with Jesus' claim of Lord and King? There are three responses. First, like Herod, is to seek and destroy. We don't like the question. We really don't. And so we seek and destroy. The second response, represented by the Magi or the wise men, is seek and worship. We don't see a better way. In fact, we see the best way in Jesus. And so we seek and we worship. There's also a third response. We may have the knowledge, but we ignore. We might call it indifference. And perhaps this is the biggest tragedy of all of these three, because by being passive, we still reap the consequences. You know, all responses have consequences for yourself and for those around you. And so, this morning, in this Christmas season, what is your response to Jesus' claim as your Lord and King?